3. Feel free to call that number and leave a message for us with news to share on the show or an audio message for your...
The following is a previously broadcast program.
My name is Mycelium, and you're listening to Audio Smut on CKUT 90.3 FM. It's about 6 p.m. here in Montreal, and I'm gathered here today with Amanda Monti, a poet based in New York, who is going to share with us their wicked little games.
The world was on fire, and no one could save me but you. Strange world desire. Foolish people, I never dreamed that I'd meet somebody like you, and I never dreamed that I'd lose somebody like you. No,
Pad 1, the mycelial passum. Mycelium. Definition. Fungal underground networks of which mushrooms are just a small visible part. Quote, nobody loves no one. End quote. Chris Isaak in Wicked Game. I wanted to become a mushroom, and so I put an ad on Craigslist. Will you help me build a mushroom hat in exchange for a palm reading? I made it explicit that there was no budget for this, and all I had to offer was this divinatory reading, which I taught myself when I was 14, because my mother was a very knowledgeable witch with a pendulum, and I had a heightened sensitivity for the effect of stories on hands and faces. I didn't think much of it and would have felt lucky to hear back from even just one. 22 people replied. Some mushrooms twinkle in the dark to lure insects in attracted to light, such as firefly or fly larvae, who will crawl between and round and over and under the twinkling mushroom in search of a luminous lover until they realize that, oh, it's just a mushroom. And at this point, their little feet are covered in microscopic spores, oh, which the fly will spread in service of the fungus dancing. Oh, fucking. Oh. At the time, I became lovers with my friend, but it was very casual, meaning that she was very casual about it, and I was very much in love with her. I tried to console myself by obsessing over the plant person from my local plant shop. I found out sunshine, politics, and hobbies through eavesdropping on other customers. The plant person was a Marxist Scorpio dancer who always wore tank tops that revealed a tattoo of the little prince. Sometimes the little prince cried droplets of sweat, and I came to discern the plant person's scent as it mingled with the lucky bamboo and tiny palm trees. All I wanted that summer was to get a better glimpse of the inside of the plant person's palm and let the lines condensed into their skin reveal to us that these hands were, yes, wrinkly from the water and fragrant from the dirt, but also hands made to want me on a deep and intimate level. Outside, the streets were creamy with micro Milky Ways, as birds were still shitting on pavements, and people were still talking about the weather like they had nothing to do with it. The largest living creature on Earth is mostly invisible to the human eye. There is a humongous fungus that covers almost 4 square miles below a forest in what is now called Oregon. Its network of roots called mycelia permeate the ground of the forest, weaving intricate lines into the deepest layers of the soil. Wrinkles around skin, quietly telling their stories. I honestly couldn't help reaching out after reading the ad description on Craigslist. I would love to help you make a mushroom hat. Let me know. B. One night, the doors of my bi-weekly sea creature movement appreciation improvisation club were locked. I had been forgotten. My night had begun with a failure, so I was once again free of having to have a productive time in New York City. Someone I recently knew had recently been awarded the Best Person in Madrid award. The criteria seemed very unclear, but some people just get an award for anything. It must be very exhausting. Winning is so very lonely. I locked my bike and went to Rite Aid for pen and paper. Back by the scented candles, someone came up to me and asked, "Do I look like a person who should be chasing crackheads?" I didn't know what to say, because I don't know what a person ought to look like, but I do think that Marcy can be a climate. When we were 16, we swallowed some ecstasy and sat by the riverbed, where we waited for the future to come get us. Instead, we were found by a man with a mini keyboard and a driver's license. He drove us to the suburbs, where we watched him eat fried noodles at 6 a.m., Men will make you watch them eat fried noodles for the rest of your life if you don't step in. Finally, he asked if we wanted to do crack cocaine with him in his bathtub. We politely refused and walked home for a very, very long time. There is a fungus that grows a spiky red stalk in autumn. People call it stinkhorn because it oozes brown slime, which, if received by the specialized cells high up in the human nose, will be recognized as something akin to rotten eggs. But some humans who have eaten stinkhorn report that it leaves behind a sticky spore mucilage which clings to the throat and the tongue tenaciously for hours and hours like an icky kiss. Dear B, thank you so much for getting in touch. What materials should I get for our meeting? A. The pen I bought was purple, and so I followed someone with a purple coat. They headed to a nearby bar. The person checking IDs called me sir, looked at me again, eyes lingering on my chest, then apologized as if it was their fault that gender was a fallacy. To strike up a conversation with the confused door person, I said, protandric simultaneous hermaphroditism, which is a very long word to describe the very simple gender-switching lifestyle of the peppermint shrimp, who acquires certain gender traits depending on its social situation. The person checking IDs didn't show much interest and let me in. I sat down in a booth and decided to message one of the mushroom people of Craigslist. Where a mushroom ends or begins is hard to tell. Is it in the trees, the fruiting body, or the underground webs? And how easily it can seep into soil and pores and make the mushroom-like too. It's something that many humans try to forget, the fact of our porosity. In the bar, I observed the crowds and wanted to see love. I tried to understand the rituals. My friend with the purple coat was now part of a semicircle surrounding the DJ. There was liquid exchange in the form of tall alcoholic drinks and moist, fearless kissing. There was body language, slippery and soft and sticky. There was the performance of primary tasting organs being inserted into various holes. In my periphery, I noticed a man watching me watching. I began watching him watching me watching. I held his gaze to embarrass him, but feared it could be misread as flirtatious, so I began thinking foul eggs. Foul eggs, millionaires, millionaires, foul eggs, so as to communicate clear disgust through my eyes. And then they started to play Chris Isaak's Wicked Game. Hot, salty emotion flushed through my spine and out of my eyes. I had wrapped up two old lovers in this song. I did not think it was possible that a song could hold two people at once, but it did. The secret was that you were the one who had to set boundaries. Neither love nor Chris Isaak would do it for you. Both would just go on and on humming like sirens. Mushrooms have a physical connection with rebirth. In order to keep things moving, there are certain types of mushrooms who will decompose organic matter, such as dead tree trunks, into new nutrients. They accompany the tree into a new life, like ferrymen or the recycled melodies of pop music. This world is only gonna break your heart, hummed a disembodied chorus as the camera panned across the music video for Wicked Game, while my mum was on the phone to one of her long-distance lovers. I was being indoctrinated into heterosexual desire by the music videos of the early millennium. White foam washes over the screen and reveals a sun-kissed Helena Christensen, so bored and divine. as I sat through the entirety of the top 20 various expressions of masculine yearning condensed into a vague shape of a gaping wet mouth. I wanted to be both Chris and Helena. I wanted the extremes of both boredom and pleasure. I wanted to be man and woman, something else entirely. I didn't think there was space in language for this, so I dug deep into the soil of where desire came from and covered it with earth. But desire is an organism that roots deep, even if fruiting bodies are not immediately visible to the naked eye. Hello, listeners and mycelium. What a pleasure to read a book called Mycelial Person to Mycelium. I mean, it's kind of truly the dream. But hello. My name is Amanda Monti, and I just read to you from Mycelial Person, my book, which was published this past summer. I am a cross-disciplinary poet and translator, and I work with language and text, but also with performance and sound and curation and collaboration. I'm based in unceded Lenape land, Queens, and I'm really excited to have this conversation today with Mycelium. Hello.
Thank you, Amanda, for reading these excerpts and for being here with me today and for sharing your work. Yeah, so we can start talking about this book you just published on Vegetarian Alcoholic Poetry Press. Do you want to tell us a little bit about where it comes from and where your interest in interspecies relationship, maybe specifically fungal relationships, stems from?
Totally, yeah. Shout out to the press, the small little press in Vermont, who've been really nice throughout the editing, the publishing process. So the book, I mean, it's funny with publishing. I wrote the book quite a long time ago, actually. The timelines required of publishing made it so that it only got published this summer, which I'm also still really grateful for. I think I'm still figuring out what it means to revisit a past self almost. I think there's something really healing and generative about remaining friends with your creative work from previous selves. But the book, it came to be, I remember when I started to write the story that later turned into Mycelium Person, which is what I was reading just now. I had no idea that I was gonna research mushrooms for it initially. All I knew was that I was really heartbroken at the time. I had just relocated to the States, and I randomly actually happened upon a group of people, the mycological Society of New York City, who is this like amazing group of like eclectic folks all interested in fungi, who took these walks around this reservoir that is very close to my home now. And this reservoir became like a very important site for like me and my healing at the time. And so I would like always visit this reservoir, feeling like very like pulled to this truly like, it's like this random little forest in the middle of Queens. And I would always see these people like going on these like walks, but I also was obsessed with the way they were like walking, because they were like, they weren't even really walking because they were like so slow and just like looking at everything. And I was like, who are, like, what's going on? And then so initially, and then at some point I approached them and they were like, oh yeah, we're mycologists. Like, do you want to join? And I was like, yeah. And so that was the beginning of it all. I was like, wow, the world of fungi, the world of fungal observation, of like, like the pace of like navigating the world when you become attuned to a fungal organism, it like all opened up in front of me. And then I still had this heartbreak that I was like walking through, and something in me was like, do you know, maybe if I like start like telling like a kind of like story about, if I start telling a story about these fungal organisms and my moving through the world, maybe they can teach me something about relationships and about romance and about healing from heartbreak. I really like had that, I think that was like my intention of why then just randomly began writing at that moment in time. And at the same time, I also became, I used to do a lot of performance work before I was owning in more on poetry. And when I was spending a lot of time with the Mycological Society, I started to think about what could mushroom drag be? What is mushroom drag? Like, because I was also thinking a lot about gender and how I was performing my own gender at the time. And I was like, what is, I wonder if I could like involve mushrooms in this, if I could do like a drag thing with mushrooms. But I'm like terrible at like DIY and costumes and anything. So I was like, I'm just gonna see if anyone can help me with this. I think I need a hat. That's what I was thinking. I was like, I think if I do this drag, I need like a hat. And then I just went onto Craigslist and asked around, and so many people got back to me. And so that then also became part of the story, like me meeting all of these people from the internet and like building this thing. Yeah, so that was the first part of the book, the seeds for that story.
I love this story. I love this story. It makes me think of, I was reading this interview with a mycologist, and he was asked what he liked the most about his job, and he answered, the people. And it's just true in my experience that mycophiles are just very interesting people who come from all walks of life and have just kind of interesting angle of looking at things. And I think it's moving also that you connected with fungus in the throes of heartbreak, because I can deeply relate my initial, you know, the first spores of my own mycophilia are tied to my experience of ecosexuality, where this like feeling of failure at romance and at sex is alleviated by the connection that I can develop erotically and romantically with the earth and its many beings. So I just, I'm glad you shared all that, and it makes a lot of sense. I loved your book, and I loved the way that it was this kind of like humble love letter to those low species, which I personally care about. Of course, mushrooms, but also, you know, all the microbes and bacteria which make up our own self. You know, we're more than 50% of ourself is not ourself. It's something other. So what is the self at this point? And of course, weed, what you call weedkin. And you would go on those weed walks and organize workshops where you would kind of celebrate those kind of warriors of the pavement somehow, and decorate them and cherish them and show them some sort of appreciation and care, which they rarely, if ever, get. And so I really appreciated that from the book.
Totally. So many of the things you said. Oh, yes. What is a self anymore at this point? That's what I also loved from diving into the world of fungus and mycelium. It just makes redundant all of these conceptions that we have of an individual. Like, it's ridiculous to think of bodies as individuals, like you say, because they are made up of like bacterial collaborations, like in the most like material sense. Like, our bodies are just a relationships between species. The weeds were another very, very important friendship for me in making this book. Also actually connected to, again, this reservoir that I mentioned. This reservoir used to be actually a storage space for water in the 60s, and then it, like, the city outgrew the capacity for this place to hold enough water, and so then it was kind of just taken over by plants and trees, and it's this small little forest now that's 40-50 years old, and many of those plants are what we would call invasive species or weeds. And it's so complicated, like, to learn about weeds and this like super crass term, invasive species. I became very interested in why some of the plants that were growing in that reservoir were labeled invasive and others weren't. I mean, it's a complex set of relationships, like the porcelain berry is one very domineering type of vine that grows in that reservoir, and it's called invasive species because, well, it kind of It doesn't have any natural predators, really, in this state. And so it, like, very easily takes over entire ecosystems. But it's also called invasive because there's, like, this idea that this plant has been, it's not, like, native to this land. But, like, what does that mean? Like, the plant, like, in the case of the porcelain berry, it was, like, brought over by colonizers, truly. Colonizers who were just, like, really into the look of this plant. They were like, this looks pretty, so we're just gonna, like, take it and bring it here. Like, this kind of history that this plant carries, it feels like so incredibly, like, important. And whether you want it or not, it, like, keeps you accountable to history. Like, it's like these plants are so intimately entwined with, like, the violence of this country, the, like, stories of dispossession. Like, there's not a single invasive species out there that doesn't link back to violence and dispossession, human dispossession. All of them do. And so in this way, they become these, like, just incredible organisms that, like, remind us of, like, history, like, and continue to remind us of history. And that is actually so precious, truly, to have that and to have weeds, like, continuously, like, opening up this conversation.
Yeah, I'm really excited to hear your analysis and your perspective on weeds, and it makes me think of this moth here in northeastern America. I'm sure there is some also in your state, but here in Montreal we have a real tree crisis. There's many parasites that are killing different types of trees, and one in particular is, I forget the name of the species of moth. But it's this moth who is just hungry for leaves, all types of leaves, all types of species of trees. And just, you know, they are in the hundreds of thousands, just climbing up, you know, covering the trunks and this, like, and their fuzzy caterpillars, and climbing up to the top and eating all the leaves to the point where the tree just cannot do photosynthesis anymore and dies. And the mountain, the Mount Royal, which is the most, like, you know, sacred place in the city, like, the everything rests on the shoulder of the mountain in Montreal, that's for sure, in Geojag in Montreal. And the mountain is sick, and you can see it. You can see her balding, you know, in the summer, and it's like, spooky. And you can't walk around without hearing this, like, rain of, you know, this incessant falling of, you know, this splash of small caterpillars falling on you, you know, inside you, and it's terrifying, and it's sad, and it's disgusting. And I remember having this moment of just, like, hatred for them. Like, why are you killing the trees? Like, that's fucked up, bro, you know. And then I read more about the moth, and just as you're saying, like, it all comes back to human interventionism. Some French entomologist in the 30s brought this invasive, quote-unquote, species to North America, where it should never have been, you know, in the first place. You know, mixing biotas creates crisis. And in order to kill off another parasite, as this type of, like, you know, godlike positioning of the scientist who's gonna fix everything, fix the imbalances of nature, you know, and actually creates creates endless destruction. So this man, I don't want to like demonize him or whatever, he's part of his zeitgeist, but this kind of like attitude, you know, it's like dumb, like savior attitude is actually the source of much destruction. So anyway, yeah, it made me think of this story, and it's been just like this moth that's been on my mind a lot.
Totally. That's the thing. And it's also, we are just in a state of deep, deep crisis and deep imbalance. And that's why invasive species are taking over, because human intervention has led to so much pain and suffering. And it's like hard to hope these days. And I also don't think it's incredibly productive to have hope. I think it's productive to train our attention to the present, and that is exactly what invasive species, like, at least for me, they give me an entrance point into that.
And we call them invasive or parasitic in parts to relieve ourselves from the responsibility of environmental justice, in a way, because it's not, you know, it's not our fault. It's this invasive moth or this invasive weed or whatever, you know. It's like a displacement of responsibility.
Totally. Yeah. I don't know, especially if you live like in an urban environment, like, I feel weeds are such amazing, like, companions to, like, notice and navigate a city by. And they're just everywhere. And, yeah. I really want to come to Montreal and see what kind of weeds are there someday. what stories they have to tell.
The world was on fire. No one could save me but you. It's strange what this lie will make foolish people do. I never dreamed that I'd meet somebody like you. And I never dreamed that I'd meet somebody like you. No. Thing to do to let me dream of you. What a wicked thing to say. You never felt this way. What a wicked thing to do to make me dream. Save me much here.
strange what the sigh will make foolish people do. I never dreamed that I'd love somebody like you. And I never dreamed that I'd lose somebody like you. No, I don't wanna fall in love. No, I don't wanna fall in love with you.
Hello again, this is Mycelium. You're still listening to Audio Smut on CKUT 90.3 FM, and you've just listened to the riveting version of Chris Isaak's Wicked Game by Celine Dion, duetting with the man himself. Very sexy moment for Celine, unusually sexy. We love that for her. And we can't wait for her to come out. So let's jump into what you're working on, you know, right now. What's currently on your mind, on your spirit, on your heart? Where is your poetic process is at?
Also so grateful to have been introduced to Celine's incredible version of Wicked Game. Wow. Thank you for that, Mycelium. So at the moment, well, it's funny, like I always like thought of myself as a storyteller first and foremost, even as I've been working with like kind of like poetry and performance, not specifically with narrative, but like I still always was thinking about stories in my work. And at the moment, I'm kind of moving away from that a little bit. And I'm becoming really interested in, like, speech liberated from language, if that makes sense. So actually, what that means is I'm also working on this radio play at the moment, which is a recorded a piece of writing which affords all of these really new and exciting possibilities for me, at least, to think about writing and sound and language. I find recording my writing incredibly spacious, and at the moment I'm playing a lot with silence and sounds and like the incommunicable things that are in language. I'm really obsessed at the moment with vowels, especially vowels in pop songs, like O and A and E and O. Like, I think in pop, those are like the moments where, like, those are the moments of desire. Like, that is like what glues the pop song together. And that is also the space of like the incommunicable, like this thing that I'm saying, like, where like, that is like speech without language, like when we just hear like these moments of like ooh and like it's like beyond language, and yet it just communicates like everything and nothing at all. So I've been thinking about that a lot and have been like experimenting with like doing kind of like rituals with pop songs and with vowels and with stepping into this like space of the incommunicable, like the space of the O, the space of the ah, and have been doing like lots of experimenting around that. I led a workshop the other day with a really brilliant person called Ryan Hart, and they are a dancer, and we've been kind of playing with creating rituals that use pop song lyrics but also movement to express what cannot be expressed. And those rituals also created writing and generated writing. So that's really exciting to me. And I want to keep on doing that and following the path of the O and ah and mm. It's also been so fun working with like a dancer, like as a poet. Really, really cool. Like for someone, I live so much in words and language, and feels really, really refreshing to be reminded of how everything comes from body and ends in body. And so, yeah, talking about collaboration and interspecies thinking. Honestly, I think there's like the species of dance and the species of poetry, and I'm excited about the collaboration of that.
Yeah, that's the strength of inter or cross-disciplinary or even indisciplinary artistic processes, is that there's this realization that there's connections between things that you wouldn't have foreseen. And I think that's one of the things that doing radio has taught me up to this point, is like the fact that language and words and sounds and music are also movement. They're very literally waves moving, which have shapes, and which are all around us at all times. Shaping our spacious experience of the world, and sounds affect our bodies. They are vibrations which have an impact, and in the same sense, movement, perhaps especially dance, is also the creation of a form of language.
Totally. And it does, it feels like it just does the thing that I, at least for me, like poetry does, which is like poetry's relationship to language is like it trains a kind of like attention to things that are otherwise not so easily visible. And dance does something very similar with like movement and with like moving through the world. Like it trains its attention on ways of movement. And like you say, everything is movement in the end. And everything is very material also, even if we can't see it. But waves are so material, and sounds are material, words are material. All of
And they are also spells. They have an impact on our environment and our lives, ourselves and others.
Totally. Again, I think the O and the ah in the pop songs, those are spells. Like when Whitney is saying you, like that is a spell. Like that is a spell because it reaches, it's a spell first of all because of like it's reached so many bodies and is continuing to do so. But it's also, it like goes right into your body. Like that is a spell. Yeah, that's magical, truly.
Well, thank you so much for this beautiful conversation. Always so nice to exchange with you. Very interesting brain you got there. And I was wondering if you had, you know, one last thing on your mind.
Thank you so much for having this conversation with me, mycelium, that went into so many directions that are so very dear to my heart. Fungus, weeds, magic. I'm also really obsessed with gut bacteria at the moment. I mean, I have been for a long time, and probably makes sense with the whole fungus thing, but I'm like intensely nodding out about bacteria in the gut at the moment, and pooing, and how that relates to like reading and writing also. So that's very much on my mind right now. If anyone feels inspired by that, honestly reach out to me. Always looking for like collaborators, co-thinkers, co-makers. We can talk about gut bacteria and poo and poetry. That sounds like a dream to me. Yay. Cool. Okay, well, with that being said, I'm going to finish us off with reading two somewhat recent sexy poems that might or might not be part of the radio play that I mentioned. Okay. This first one is called Cream, and it's dedicated to the summer. Cream. Sugar mammal slit throat, infinitely tender in its cadence, telling people you love them, selling them ice cream, holding their hands on an airplane, forgetting you're not in heaven, then forgetting you're in heaven, then forgetting nothing, remembering it all, forgetting this is what heaven feels like a manageable sucking, gentle. August. I gave pleasure to paintings 30,000 years ago. I am etching here into my lover's language. Here. My lover's body changes lines. Here. May. The social depends in part on an agreement on how we measure space and time, and lines are created as an effect of the repetition of certain expressions. Laugh lines, furrows through the forehead. Here. 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 Well-trodden forest paths. But the paradox of the footprint is that lines are both created by being followed and followed by being created. June, don't disappear into my lips. April, it is by following some lines more than others that we acquire a sense of who we are. July, yesterday we sold out of pistachio, cookies and cream, matcha, Earl Grey, lavender. Body orients towards person with curls, strands of grey hair. I ask, waffle or waivers? She says she hasn't had waivers in 15 years. Proceeds to call the moment Proustian. I have no idea what her comment is referring to. Respond, Proustian ice cream temporalities. She laughs approvingly. What would it be like to lick where the ice cream goes? It drips onto her collarbones, her neck, her fingertips. I'd like to suck them gently, make her giggle. Quick and sticky, it is 100 degrees. She says, what's your personal Venmo? I want to tip you. I say, there's a tip jar. She says, but your name? I say, yes, yes. Three more times. Here. It smells good down here. Would you like a sample? Sugar Mamu, open throat, tethered to the thickest part. Life is full of far and close. Most of all, it's the breezy stuff that keeps me here. And this final one is called Cake. Light counting, counting entities to crush on, wrinkle your brain into a saint's dress. Even touching this shit, I slide down and skin changes, wind chimes in the corner, night in kias and opening. Let the exes go. God, dog, dig, let them go. It becomes mixed up, hormones and blue cream cake. It's been a week, but next week this behavior shall be known as longing. System collapse because of abundance. Thick tissue, lined walls, fleshy. I am magenta, groaning every letter of the alphabet out of my mouth, rectum, urethra, and cunt. I offer my stiff silicon another shift. With the ice cream, I am fired, I am watered, I sprout, I take the train all the way to the closed aquarium. Hermaphroditic crustaceans see me. They suck on my spine, knowing I am their relative, fired from the wild. I sink deeper and deeper and wake up with no sphincter. I suck in fruit through the capillaries, offer myself to the internet. The kind that is swimming with their mouths open, and all the krill and all the planktons that happen to thicken the air get caught in my furry lips. Hey, let me swallow consonants. Let me seduce you with what is soft and ancient in the alphabet. A, E, I, O, U, 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 U.
On fire, and no one could save me but you. Strange what desire will make foolish people do. I never dreamed that I need somebody like you. I never dreamed I knew somebody like you.
The sound of this doorbell may seem pretty ordinary to you, until you realize that it's Graham, who's 75 years old and still delivering meals to people in need in his neighborhood. And that for many of them, it's the most comforting sound they'll hear all day. Seniors bring so much to Quebec. Let's recognize their contribution. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Amandla, your weekly news show with briefings and analysis from the continent of Africa, from a progressive Pan-Africanist point of view. And I'm Doug Miller, here with Gwen Schulman. Gwen Schulman.
Except here, this time, is we are in Malawi, not in Montreal, and you're about to listen to a rebroadcast because Doug and I are away for Malawi, 1 month, actually. And in the time that we're there, we hope to do some great radio so that when we're back home in Montreal, there's going to be some good, fresh interviews for all of you to listen to. But in the meantime, we've picked some of our favorite shows from the last year to rebroadcast while we're away.
So stay tuned.
Good evening and welcome to Amandla, 1 hour of African current affairs brought to you in English and French here on CQT 90.3 FM. We are still broadcasting from the comfort of our homes, hoping to get back in the studio soon. I'm here with Doug, and we just had an absolutely amazing conversation with Dan O'Meara. He's a South African. He was a longtime militant of the African National Congress. Went on to become a professor of political science at UQAM here in Montreal. And we wanted to talk to Dan.